How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is September 9, 2014, figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. Dave is here as always. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Dave, what's going on?
I don't know. Seems like a lot.
Always seems like a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's
the
a lot
life
going
of
on.
Dave. Always a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot this week. There's the NXT show this week. There's UFC show. Actually, that's pretty much it. I think the next week's the real big one. That one's, there's probably always a UFC show. There's the Arena Mexico anniversary show. There's WWE. So that's all going on in 2 weeks.
Well, Raw tonight, the good news is this show was 1,000 times better than last week's show. That's a positive way to start it off.
I wouldn't say that at all. It was better,
really?
But
I thought it was much better. I thought last week's Raw was one of the worst Raws in years.
Last week's Raw was terrible, but this was just, this had its moments. I think that the finish of the cage match was good. The ending of the, or the post-match of Orton and Reigns was good. But the rest of the show I thought was just kind of, John Cena was very good. But a lot of the show I just thought was average and some of it was real bad. So I wouldn't. It was okay. I didn't really think it was anything special of a show.
Well, let's start with the review here. It opened up with this was the season premiere opposite the debut of Monday Night Football. So they stacked the show. A lot of different things, including a Jericho versus Bray Wyatt cage match to open up the show. They had a pretty decent cage match. The other Wyatts were outside. I guess the assumption was that they could not climb, which of course they. Well, they didn't really climb, but they did stop Jericho from getting out. Basically,
well, they weren't supposed to climb. They were just supposed to keep Jericho from being able to climb out.
I see. It was basically a wrestling match inside a cage for most of it. Jericho made his big comeback, same comeback he always does. We got a Y2J, Let's Go Wyatt dueling chant. A lot of the dudes turning on Jericho in this match because they liked Bray. Wyatt cut him off, and instead of escaping normally, he tried his bridge walk to the door, which took about four times as long, and he got caught. Superplex by Bray, middle rope Frankensteiner by Jericho. Jericho finally went to escape, and the Wyatts stopped him. So he can't get out, and so, of course, it's a cage match on Raw, and so he decides, I have got to do a dive off of the cage onto Bray Wyatt, which he does. And he came up selling his knee. Crowd chanted, this is awesome. Jericho is a 43-year-old man who is 44 in November. I'm not sure if diving off cages is in his best interest, especially when Seth Rollins is diving off a cage at the end of the show.
I thought that it wasn't the smartest thing to have two guys dive off the cage with the same move on the same show at all.
Wow.
I think that, that should have been something that they went through and whichever one was going to be the important one, which may have been Seth, he should have been the one to do it. It's like it takes away from it when both guys do, especially a spectacular move like that on the same show. It kind of,
So he did his big dive and went to go out the door, and they essentially had a battle halfway out the door and on the steps. And since Jericho was selling his knee, Bray pounded on the knee. And finally rolled out of the cage and got the win. So, right man won. It was a different finish than usual for a cage match. And then Bray continued to destroy his knee afterwards, gave him a Sister Abigail in the middle of the ring. So, apparently, the word is Bray may be next in line for Dolph Ziggler in the title. I don't know about that feud.
I'll check on that. I don't know that they would want to downgrade Bray that to that degree, but I mean it's possible. But that's pretty much downgrading him a lot.
That's a big step down.
Yeah. Because they just haven't done anything with. And it doesn't feel to me that the Ziggler Miz thing is going to be over so quick anyway. But I don't know where Bray goes. I mean, Bray's kind of like where he goes after the Jericho, this was the blow off of Jericho and Bray. At least it was supposed to be when it was booked to be, and it was as of this morning. So I presume that it still is, especially because they didn't really leave a lot of leeway for you know, they didn't leave a lot of leeway to do another match. So yeah, Bray, as far as this pay-per-view goes, I don't think that Bray's on the pay-per-view. There's not really an opponent for him, and the pay-per-view's pretty much full now. So he'll do something on the pay-per-view to set up his next program. I mean, I guess it could be Ziggler. I don't know. It just seems like that. Yeah, I don't know. Just to me, beating Jericho and then moving on to Ziggler, that doesn't seem like it seems like you're kind of going in reverse.
We had Hunter with Kane, Seth, and Randy in the back. And Randy wanted to know how unforgettable they wanted the season premiere to be. He said he wanted permission to do something terrible, something worse than cinder blocks to Roman Reigns.
He could do a skit with the Bellas.
I don't even get started on that. We'll talk about that. I presumed he was talking about the punt, but I guess he was just talking about any sort of beating. So anyway, Hunter gave him permission to do whatever he wanted. So there you go. Ziggler came out wearing a tuxedo top and a V-neck shirt. He talked about the recent iCloud hack, said it was reprehensible. Nobody deserved to be treated like that, except maybe one guy, who, of course, was Miz. And he said he had some hacked photos of Miz.
And this was a bad one, too.
This was horrible.
Yeah, you're telling me the show's so great, and I mean, this segment was really bad.
I wasn't thinking about this when I said it was better than last week. Yeah. Normally, when they do these segments, they do like. They do like some weird Photoshop terrible comedy. This time, we're supposed to believe that Ziggler really did hack the guy's phone because these were real photos of Miz. One was him getting a facial treatment. The next one was him shaving his chest, which was hilarious coming from Ziggler, who also shaves his chest. And then Miz interrupted before the last one, and he was there with Damian Mizdow, his stunt double. And Miz said the pics were for medical purposes only. He threatened to sue Ziggler, his people, everybody in the entire world if they tried to republish these photos. And then threatened that he would never work in this town again, which is an old Hollywood line.
I kind of like that one, especially since they're in Baltimore.
Yeah. This was not selling the Marine to me, by the way, Miz is acting here.
No.
So Ziggler showed the last photo of Ziggler spray tanning his bare ass. Announcers had to do their fake laugh. The only redeeming thing about this was the look of horror on Sandow's face when they showed this photograph.
Yeah, he was the star of the segment, and
yes.
it was only for his facial in that spot.
Yes,
because this segment wasn't much. Ziggler isn't a guy to carry a long talking segment, and even if he was, the segment was going to suck no matter who was doing it, and it did.
So Sandow hit the ring, he got drop-kicked, he got zigzagged, and I have no interest whatsoever in this feud right now. Comedy,
yeah.
Over the Intercontinental title.
Well, it's not that it's comedy, it's just that segment sucked. I mean, I don't care if it was serious or comedy. It just was bad, you know, bad idea, didn't work. And yeah, I would say that it's just a match. It's just an undercard match anyway. So it's not like, you know, if this was like a money match, they probably wouldn't have done this anyway. So when it's not a money match, you can kind of do whatever you want. But it sucked.
So we had Natalia and Rosa against AJ and Paige. A lot of CM Punk chants. They mentioned that Total Divas was E's most watched season 3 premiere in 4 years. That's a mouthful. And what a stat.
Probably because the Kardashians season 3 premiere was more than 4 years ago,
I'm
right?
I'm sure that's what it was.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, God, talk about narrowcasting a stat, you know? It's like he's the best guy batting third on this team in the last 2 years.
Amazing.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, one of the better rated shows on that station. But it's, you know, again, it's not at the level of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Of course not.
So, not that that really matters, but.
So, we had Natalya and Rosa against AJ and Paige. Paige, actually, they got the heat on Rosa Mendez, of all people.
Rosa worked most of the match, and it sounds like that's the worst thing possible. But she was not anywhere close to as terrible as she was last week. It was, it was really just that nobody cared. It wasn't even that she was that bad, just, you know. And then finally, Paige pretty much was having her way with Rosa. AJ tagged herself in and immediately put on the Black Widow, and it was over.
Yeah. Rosa was still quite horrible.
By Rosa's standards, she wasn't.
I guess so. So she, it's funny because the finish was the Black Widow. And boy, did AJ apply that move as slowly and carefully as humanly possible.
Well, there was a lot of margin for error. Well, she didn't even bother working her over. She just walked in, and Rosa was not even in the right position. She was down on her knees or something. So AJ just, like, walked right into the move, and that was it. And then AJ and Paige were kind of doing their little mind games, and Natalia and Rosa were mad. Paige was mad because AJ took the pin from her, stole her win, and Natalia was mad because she wanted Rosa to tag out when Rosa was in trouble, and Rosa decided not to tag out, and then she got beat right away. So AJ kissed the belt, and Paige freaked out, and then Paige kissed the belt. So,
and AJ freaked out.
Yeah, there you go. So it's a three-way with AJ, Paige, and Nikki Bella, with Brie not in the match, even though they've done nothing but build up Nikki and Brie, you know, and I guess they could add it next week, but as of now, Brie is not in the match. Or against Nikki on pay-per-view.
Well, maybe Brie costs Nikki the match, and then they do Nikki and Brie.
Yeah, I suppose you could. You might as well, since you spent all this time with this terrible feud, you might as well do a match to make, you know, but whatever. It's not going to save that feud.
So backstage, Jericho was talking to the trainer, and Randy Orton came in and destroyed him and his knee.
Mm-hmm.
Human resources should be all over this guy. That's unacceptable, that attack in the trainer's room.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so the plan is Randy Orton and Jericho and Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns for singles. But when I watched the show, it certainly seemed to me that they were keeping Randy Orton and Roman Reigns alive, so perhaps that could change. But that was the plan as of this morning.
We had the Heyman-Cena promo. Cena interrupted him pretty much immediately. He told Paul to tell him whatever he had to say to his face. And Paul did this big promo where he put over John Cena as a man who never gave up. And he noted that, actually, Cena made an interesting comment here. I don't know if this was just a line thrown out or if it was going to lead to something or maybe will lead to something. But Cena noted that Brock beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and we have not seen The Undertaker since. But Brock beat Cena at SummerSlam, and Cena was back a week later. Which sounded to me like kind of a, I don't know, maybe if they decide to go with Cena and Undertaker at WrestleMania, if Taker wants to do another one, it almost seemed like it was a seed for that, but I don't know. Just a weird line. So, Cena...
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I think that if they're going to do WrestleMania, really, if Undertaker can go, he really should go against Sting.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, I don't...
But it was such a weird line for him to throw out there. It was like a burial of the Undertaker.
Maybe Undertaker's not coming back.
Huh. So anyway, he gave this long...
I know someone who talked to Undertaker, but this was a couple months ago, and he said that he's probably not coming back, but, you know, it's a lot of months away. And
he never decides till about November anyway.
Right. I know, exactly. So I always believe he's coming back because he pretty much always does, but, the difference is this year is that Vince didn't believe he was coming back, and that's why he lost. So it's stronger that he's not coming back, but who's to know? You know, again, until November, December, and see how he feels then.
So we had the old deal where Paul is begging. He goes, "I'm going to give you the secret to beating Brock Lesnar," and the secret is that John Cena needs to turn heel, without using those exact words. But he wants John Cena to turn heel on all the fans who are just chanting at him that he sucks. And so Cena erupts into this crazy promo where he does the usual Cena thing about how I never give up. I do this for the kids that have one last wish and want to spend the day with me. I meet soldiers. I meet kids. I eat, sleep, and be John Cena.
You know, I really am uncomfortable when you use your Make-A-Wish stuff for your promo. I mean, I never like it. I mean, a lot of people do it. Almost most celebrities do, or a lot of celebrities do. And I know John does a lot of stuff that you don't hear about, and I would guess if he had his way, you wouldn't hear about any of it.
Except on Raw in front of 4 million people?
Yeah, but here, you know, it's like using it for his promo for his match. It almost feels like, okay, you know, I mean, I know it's not like that's why he's doing it, but when you do it like that, you know, the part of me that knows that so many people it would be, that's why you're doing it, says, oh my God, he's using it, you know, and using the meeting a guy with a purple heart and everything to get his match over and all. I mean, it's typical wrestling. It's not anything that other people haven't done before. I'm just, unfortunately, because so many, if not most, in that situation do it to use it. I kind of see through it. And so when someone does it in their promo, it kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But, I thought it was a great promo. I'll say that. I thought it was, really good work by Cena, and just the frustration of people who want him to go heel, and him pretty much saying that he ain't gonna do it, and maybe not even ever. I mean, he ain't doing it now. I guess. I mean, until somebody else is super over, and Roman Reigns wasn't super over tonight, so didn't feel like. Didn't feel like it's the time this week to for him to do a heel turn.
Didn't he flat out say in a recent interview that even if they wanted him to or whatever the deal was, it just was never going to happen?
He said it was never going to happen, but he's a wrestler.
Well, you're right about that.
He's a wrestler, so you know what I'm saying? And you never say never, and there may be a time when he should. It's the time's not now. And the time's not any time in the next couple months, but you never say never because you never know what's, things happen and it could be the right, thing at some point in time. But, to me, like, you don't say never, but I think that when he's doing so much of that stuff, it's difficult. I mean, there's so many different things that are important right now for him to be a babyface. And I just don't see, until somebody can carry that mantle, and part of that mantle is just giving up your life completely. And when I say completely, I mean completely. And if you're married and have kids, you really can't do what he does. And
like Roman Reigns?
Like Roman Reigns, yeah. Who has kids. Well, I think he's got a daughter. Oh, I know he's got a daughter. It's a tough deal to make that switch. And the Make-A-Wish stuff is part of it, the merchandise stuff is part of it. The fact that nobody is there is at that level yet is part of it. When somebody gets at that level, but then you still have the idea is somebody willing to sacrifice their life to that degree? I think that there are guys who are, but that's a tough one. That's a tough one, because schedule's hard enough anyway. Then you give up those days to do what he does constantly. It would drive people crazy. I'm amazed it hasn't driven him crazy, honestly, especially with the crowd on him, because how many of these guys, when I've seen top baby faces, whether it was Hogan, Dusty Rhodes, Batista, real obvious. He's the most obvious. Dusty was actually worse than Batista. But when you get those top baby faces, even Flair, when he was a baby face, and, people started booing, they all get all weirded out. It's a tough position to be in. And Cena's got it worse than any of them. And if he gets weirded out, he sure hides it well. He sure doesn't ever show it in front of the people. And when the topic of conversation comes up, he's very matter of fact about it. And I mean, I remember talking to him about it, and it was just like, look, when I was a kid, I was the guy who cheered the heels and booed the faces. So I get it. And it doesn't bother him because, and he says, you know, because I was that guy. So that's what he says. He also says that he idolized Hogan.
Well, yeah. Who had a, obviously a very, monumental heel turn after.
No, as a little kid.
I see. Yeah, I see.
I don't think he was idolizing Hogan in 1999. He may, you know, I mean, he was already breaking in by then.
96 when he did his big turn.
Yeah.
So anyway, the gist
well,
of this.
That's when Cena was trying to be a bodybuilder.
That's right. So the gist of this was that Cena says, I'm done talking. It's time to fight. He said that he was going to give Paul 7 days to bring Brock to Raw. If Brock shows up next week, he's going to fight him. And if not, he's going to fight Paul. Nice. So he said, have a nice week. I'll see you next Monday. And later it was announced that, in fact, Brock Lesnar is going to be on the show next Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a go-home show. He has to be.
So we had Sheamus and Seth Rollins. Cesaro's out there in a suit watching. Sheamus made a big comeback, hit the backbreaker. Cesaro comes up on the steps, grabs the belt. They have a tug of war. Sheamus lets go. Cesaro goes flying into the dasher boards. And then Seth hits a dropkick to the distracted Sheamus. Mistimed curb stomp, gets the pin. Sheamus just kind of bumped a little bit too late. And there you go. This is setting up the title match here. Did you see NXT this week?
By the way, Cesaro mocked him afterwards and laid him out with a neutralizer after. But yes, I did see NXT.
I love how on NXT they've got a takeover show on Thursday. And to set it up, everybody involved in the Fatal 4-Way for the title goes and dominantly wins a match. And then
pretty much, we are on Raw, and they
set up title matches by having everybody lose all the time. And guess which match I care more about right now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, but they don't set up the world title match by everyone. This is the lower title. You know, again, it's like like Sheamus and Ziggler and those guys. Yeah, that's how they always do it, and that's why those titles are a kiss of death. But the you know, it's not like you know, they've had Cena and Lesnar losing on TV.
Well, no, but they have in the past, and I still don't know why you don't do this with your secondary titles. I mean, why have them? It's a rhetorical question we've talked about a million times.
Why have them if they're used, you know, the way they are? I don't have an answer other than it's just tradition and it gives something. It's a way to put guys on a card and have something, some like meaning, even though there really isn't much meaning to their match. Like, it's like, you know, you put Sheamus against Cesaro. It's a cold match. They're just out there wrestling for no reason, or they're wrestling for the U.S. title. It gives it more of a reason. But yeah,
we'll have both guys win.
You absolutely could do that, and the fact is that a lot of promotions did have secondary titles, and the guys in the secondary titles actually did win their television matches. So yeah, it's not like it's not like you're unable to do it, or it's an unheard of concept. But in this company, it is just not how they do it. And that's why those titles are completely meaningless.
Completely meaningless. Lana had a promo with Rusev. She mocked the national anthem. They played the Russian national anthem. And all of the announcers, especially JBL, were just appalled at this. And then, believe it or not, we got the debut on Raw of Sami Zayn, Adrian Neville, and Tyler Breeze. Tag team match, it was Tyler and Tyson Kidd against Sammy and Adrian Neville. There were fans who were chanting Ole at Sami Zayn,
although it didn't really
catch on too much.
Not a lot, but you know, you're gonna have that, you know, in any arena. You're gonna have a few.
Sure.
So the match was fine. I mean, you know, they didn't really have enough time to do much, but they were all fine and nobody was super outstanding other than I think people kind of got into Neville's comeback at the end.
It's kind of funny because when Neville started making the comeback, at first they didn't care, but he was so good that they cared about him by the end.
Yeah. They you know, like, there were the majority of people in the stands, you know, you could tell did not care about this match at all. There were people who did, but it's just whatever, you know, I mean, what percentage of the people have the network and actually watch that show, they would care. But there was nothing wrong with the match at all.
I liked the match.
It was short, but it was fine. It was fine.
Of the four, I think Tyson Kidd is just awesome on NXT, but the two guys they really put over here were Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. Now, obviously, they're the baby faces, but announcers spent a lot of time talking about how great they were.
They didn't put over Tyler Breeze much at all, and he didn't really do much either.
No, he got pinned by the Red Arrow, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, people got into the Red Arrow, you know, I mean, because that's a pretty spectacular move, you know, if you've never seen it, and he hasn't shown it, so... I think that people probably watching this, probably of the four, would probably want to see Adrian Neville back. Because he was the, when it was all said and done, he was the one who stood out the most.
So then we had this Bella segment. Stephanie came out. She actually had a funny line. She goes, "It's great to be back in Baltimore." And everybody cheered. And then she said, "But in all seriousness." And then she brought these guys out. So out comes Jerry Springer with his bodyguard. They called out Brie first. He wanted to know why she'd apologized on Twitter for slapping Nikki. And she said that she didn't want to stoop down to her sister's classless level. Fans were already hating this and doing the what chants. Brie said she was the one who wished her sister died in the womb, emphasizing womb.
Nikki was the one.
Nikki was the one, yes.
Yeah.
So Nikki came out next. They shook hands. And Nikki said she doesn't need to deal with her sister anymore because she has all sorts of great things going on. She's got her show, Total Divas, going into season 3, getting a title shot in 2 weeks, etc. And Springer showed footage of their issues on Total Divas, all still getting the what treatment.
Well, the thing was on those issue on their issues, this was what made the segment so, I mean, like, it was already bad, but this was a different level of bad because the clips they showed all made Brie out to be the heel.
Yes, they did.
I mean, I'm watching these clips and going like, Brie's the heel here. Brie comes off as like this selfish woman who's jealous of everyone else at her, you know, as her wedding approaches, or, you know, calls her sister fat. And it's like, you know, come on. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, have you ever seen them in person? I mean, you know, Nikki's not.
That was a completely preposterous episode.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, you know. I mean, she's 130 pounds, 135 pounds,
something like that. Yeah.
However, whatever her real weight is, she's not fat.
So Nikki says Brie might be the reason Dad left us, and so Springer says, "Funny you should mention Dad. We found him," and so Dad appears on the big screen. He says, "This is sad. It needs to be fixed." People were laughing at this.
This was so bad. I mean, it's like. The thing with this segment is that, like, everyone knows that everyone knows everything on wrestling is not real. Okay. Everyone knows that. But when they watch it, they want to pretend because it makes it way more fun when you pretend. Nobody is pretending when they watch this. That's what the problem is with this segment. They're watching this and they're just going like, "God, this is so bad. I can't pretend. I know that this is just ridiculous. I don't even believe these people don't." You know, it's like at least when you feud, make it look like you don't like the other person. It's like nobody's buying they don't like each other. They know everyone knows it's a really bad storyline, and they just want it to be over. And goddamn, so yeah, it's just not. It's brutal.
So next was Mom, and Mom got like 2 minutes of talk. Just kept going on and on. "Make this right," she said.
What did she say? Oh, Mom just told...
"Can't understand what's going on. Make this right for the two of you. Blah, blah, blah."
So she said Brie was the mature one.
Yes.
The one who's always the bigger person. So I need...
Not physically, apparently, according to the storyline.
Yeah, but no, but she needs her to be the bigger person again. And I guess, you know, Nikki didn't like that one.
No.
And then, then JJ came out?
Then they said, Brie said, "At least JJ is in my corner," which is their brother. So he comes out billed as JJ Bella to the Total Divas music, by the way.
Okay, and then the graphic underneath says JJ Garcia.
So JJ, at least JJ kind of looks like a star. I'll give him that.
So there was definitely a communications issue about what his name was.
Yes. So he blamed Nikki. He told her to stop acting like the victim. This made Nikki very upset. A fight broke out. 70-year-old Jerry Springer took a bump. They rolled over him. He fell down. Stephanie came over to break it up. She fell down. They were all rolling all over Jerry, who apparently hurt his ankle. And so now we've got a body count as part of this stupid angle. They brought a stretcher out for this poor guy. Stretchered him to the back. He gave the thumbs up.
Poor guy.
What? Can you imagine going down in battle for this storyline? Come on.
Well, I guess, unless it was... I mean, it didn't look like it was planned. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I don't put anything past wrestling, especially when it's a publicity stunt that, in this sense,
it
probably
was a picture
will...
of him backstage with Vince. It was apparently taken afterwards, and he was on his feet. So I don't know if that means it was a work, or if he wasn't as badly hurt as he thought, or if they taped it up, or what happened, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Either way, it sucked.
Yeah.
Okay, the Dust Brothers against the Matadors. Short match. Cody got the clean pin. And the main gist of it was that the Usos ran out afterwards, waffled them with the crutches. And that, of course, is setting up the title match.
Yeah. So the house shows on the Friday night house show, I believe it was. Yeah, Friday night. Jay was on crutches and he couldn't work. Saturday and Sunday, he worked. And then Monday, he's back on crutches.
Playing it safe here.
Yeah.
I don't know. He said he would be recovered by the pay-per-view in 2 weeks, so.
Well, good.
We had a nice Joan Rivers tribute. We had tweets from Hulk Hogan about her and others as well. Adam Rose versus Titus O'Neil. Bunny was at ringside. Slater went after the Bunny. The Bunny dodged. He crashed and burned. The Bunny super kicked him.
I thought that was just freaking hilarious. I have to say that. When Slater came off the steps to dive on the Bunny and just crashed on the floor. I don't know. I just thought that was just really, really funny.
Slater is awesome because he's got the role of a complete jobber and he doesn't care at all and he gives it everything he's got.
Yeah.
That's why he's getting over in this role and other guys don't.
He's got that Buddy Roberts thing, which is actually a very good thing to have when you're losing all your matches, you know. So he's good, but he was the Bunny super kicked him. I mean, can't wait. So who's going to be the Bunny?
I thought the Bunny was Ziggler, but I don't know who it's going to end up being.
The Bunny has to be somebody important at this point.
In this feud.
Well,
define important.
Better than Justin McCauley.
Well, guarantee it will be better than Justin McCauley. Because yeah, I would bet that we will at least recognize whoever the Bunny is.
Yeah. Did you hear Justin McCauley explain why they never, like, identified him?
Hmm.
But I don't know if you know, the whole idea was Justin McCauley's idea. He was the one who came up with everything. So anyway, he said the reason they didn't was because they were not doing this for the audience. They were doing it for Tito. And Tito knew who he was.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Hey,
the only people you were doing this for were the audience.
They thought they were doing it for Tito.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it was, but it was Bonner and Justin McCauley's idea. And, yeah, but mostly Justin McCauley. So we can credit him or blame him. And he felt, and he gave a great.
Did he talk to Russo about this idea?
He actually gave a great Russo explanation, though, because he said, it worked because it was trending on Twitter and people are talking about it.
Wow.
Which, you know what? I mean, I actually do think it worked to a degree in the sense that people are talking about it and they are more interested in the match. But it's just something that it's something you really don't want to do in MMA. It's crossing a line. But you can get away with it once. And this is the one time. So if they never do it again, it's not really like any foul or anything like that. But it really was like kind of a really bad looking segment, very cartoonish that didn't fit in with it. It didn't fit in its context on an MMA show. But I think that it still got, you know, it worked in its own weird way, I believe. But God, yeah. So anyway, that was his explanation of everything.
Huh. So the finish of this match, by the way, Titus got distracted by the rabbit. Super kicking somebody, he got pinned, and then the Bunny went up top, hit a big splash, and yes, It does appear that they are going to do Adam Rose and the Rabbit against Titus O'Neil and Heath Slater. It's coming.
They should. They have to.
Yeah.
I mean, after this, to me, they got to do it.
We had a Roman Reigns promo. He has the antidote for the Viper's venom.
I will say this. There's two things about this promo that were not good. Number one, the verbiage sucked. Number two, it appeared that they do not trust him to do long promos, and that will, and they should, I mean, he shouldn't be doing long promos backstage anyway. And he may not, shouldn't be doing long promos anyway, but it really felt that they didn't trust him with it, and that's going to become an issue down the line if they don't trust him.
And speaking of mistakes, they had a Lesnar hype video, which I actually thought was very good. It was a shorter version of the awesome one they did a couple of weeks ago, but Brock Lesnar should never say the words WWE Universe.
He has to. Everyone has to.
Oh, come on. The one guy.
Nobody should say it. No, really, nobody should say it, but the reality is that everyone says it.
Man.
Everyone says it. Nobody's above WWE Universe. There's not.
Well, one guy should be, and you're listening to him during this promo, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So we had Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns. They're doing a Roman Empire slogan, which I can't believe it took this long for them to figure that one out. So they got a lot of time, two commercial breaks, so we got a lot of Randy Orton chin locks. Reigns made a big comeback, and they did all of their near falls and that sort of thing. Reigns fought out of the draping DDT, hit his ring apron kick, that sort of thing. Orton power slammed him off the middle ropes. Finally went for the RKO, got Superman punched in midair, and then Orton starts beckoning to the back. And Kane, Rollins, and a ton of production dudes run out, hit the ringside. And so Orton is they're pounding on Roman, and Orton is commanding the cage be lowered. So as it's coming down, Roman makes a big comeback. He throws Kane and Seth outside. Seth tries to slide in. Not only did he not make it, but I don't know if you noticed this or not, but he was nearly impaled by a giant spike. Did you see that?
He got out just in the nick of time.
Oh, my God. They've got these giant spikes that keep the cage locked into the sides of whatever they set up on the side of the ring. And he's got all of this, he's got all this space to slide in, and he slides in right underneath the spike. And this was scary, actually, when I watched it back. He nearly got impaled. So, got out of the way. Orton was now in the ring with Reigns. Reigns made his own comeback, speared him. Seth then went up top, hit a high cross off the cage on a Roman. Kane got inside, and then all the heels destroyed Roman with a chair. Roman has no friends, apparently, including his own cousins, the Usos. They beat him up with a chair. Seth gave him a curb stomp.
The Usos had other business.
Well, they did have other business.
One dude's on crutches, and he's still chasing the Goldust and Stardust somewhere.
Yeah, they may be down the road. You're right. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and then Dean Ambrose is doing a movie.
Man.
So he doesn't. And John Cena already cut his promo. So
probably went home early. Didn't stay and watch the show.
Who, man. John Cena?
Yeah.
Well, he did come back for a dark match, but we're not supposed to know that.
Oh, you're right. And anyway, he has no friends, and they gave him the curb stomp onto the chair, and that was the end of Roman. So there you go. Maybe not 10 million times better. You may be right, but it was better than last week.
It was better than last week. But you know what? I mean, how could it not be?
I mean, really, it's very difficult to be worse.
There's no way the show was going to be, you know, worse than last week, or and it'd be pretty difficult to be the same. So, yeah, they're in a malaise right now. They're really, it's just not firing well. You know, I think some of it is you got Jericho's on the way out. You got Ambrose who's gone. You got Bray Wyatt who they just clearly don't have a direction for. And, you know, you got a good, you know, the main event is strong. Cena and Lesnar, that's a strong match. And it's the buildup's been very good. But you get that Bella thing that they've got to devote so much time to. That's just what it is, and you know, the Miz and Ziggler has kind of run its course. You know, and
run its course before it even began.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, Sheamus and Cesaro would be just great if they just did matches. And I mean, I'll bet you they have a hell of a match on the pay-per-view.
Probably.
Yeah.
We got Hall of Fame season coming. Are you excited to count ballots?
I can't say that I get excited counting ballots, but I've got a ton of ballots already. I think this is the quickest turnaround. You know, I mean, just so many people responded so quick. So I think it may be a record turnout this year, or I'm sure it'll be close to it. So it's interesting. I mean, the difference this year is that, and it, you know, anytime you change something, you're gonna have a lot of people complaining. But the deal is that I think that you know, it's we instituted the 15-year rule, which is if you started on the ballot 15 years ago, this is your last year.
Wow, forever?
Well, if you get 50%, you can stay on. But
I mean, if they drop off, will they be eligible to return down the road?
I think somebody like a Wilbur Schneider, no. That you know, you could if he drops off, someone like that. If it's someone like a Dick Murdoch, you know, when he's at the 30-year thing, you know, he can move to the 30-year category. And I don't know exactly how long that they'll get in that. If you go back there, but it's not going to be 15 years. You know, it'll be maybe a couple of years. I mean, at some point, this ballot is just too large, and the larger the ballot, it just makes it more and more difficult. And if you're not, you know, if you deserve to get in, to me, if you deserve to get in, you're going to get in 15 years. And if you don't get in 15 years, then you don't deserve to get in. So that's the deal. And there are, you know, I mean, there's Carlos Colon and Rock and Roll Express and Murdoch and some of them that are very close. I mean, well, Murdoch hasn't been close in a couple of years because his supporters, unfortunately, have been having ill health and dying off. You know, Rock and Roll Express are very close. The Andersons are very close. And it's kind of do or die for them because they've been on the ballot forever. Carlos Colon, which is, you know, you can make. And they're all close. But if they were slam dunks, they should look. If you're a slam dunk, you should be able to get in a couple of years. And if you don't get in for 15 years, you know, you run your course on the ballot. I mean, that's how it works in baseball. They're not there forever. So, you know, and if you come close, you'll be on it next year. But if you don't come close, after 15 years, it's time to leave the ballot to the younger people.
The El Rey tapings have been taking place, and the reports so far are that it is reminiscent of Wrestling Society X. It's like season two of Wrestling Society X. What else have you heard?
Well, it's all different people, but it's, you know, it does have that vibe to it. I you know, to me, I watched Triple Mania, and it was a really, like, I'm not saying the wrestling was great, although the Psycho Clown and El Tejano match was really good, and it was very, most of the show was very easy to watch, and as a show, as just a pure show, it was great. You know, just, it feels major league. They got really top guys. You know, of course, that crowd is, the crowd was great. It was shot, tremendous. Production's strong. That's a good product, and the idea of AAA in the United States on a Spanish channel running authentic AAA from Mexico, the TV tapings that they do, would have a shot at being a good Hispanic product. Would it cross over? No. But it's just not going to happen. And any attempt to make it happen will not be successful. This is not AAA. It has a couple of guys from AAA. In fact, I think the only AAA people on this thing, let's see, you had Macias as a different character. You had Blue Demon Jr., who's, you know, I mean, he's AAA, but he's more independent than AAA. You had Sexy Star, who's a pure AAA. You had Conan, who's pure AAA. And was there anyone else? I think that may have been all the people that were affiliated with AAA, because Pentagon Jr. and the other one's Phoenix. You know, those guys didn't have their working papers done. How, when you've been working on this project forever and ever and ever, that you don't have the working papers done on three of your guys so they can attend the first week. I have no idea, but it happened. There's just a lot of things that concern me about this project. I just don't feel, you know, it's Mark Burnett's version of wrestling. And, you know, he's had a lot of success in television. So he's going to, you know, they're going to adhere to what he thinks. I don't know what he knows about wrestling. But, you know, it's you know, it's a different product. It's just, it is, you know, I don't know. Like, the product is so built around Chavo Guerrero. And, you know, it's like Chavo Guerrero wasn't even successful in TNA. So, and he, it's not like Chavo Guerrero is a big star in Mexico. I mean, you know, his grandfather was a huge star in Mexico, and his father was something of a star in Mexico. You know, Eddie was a big star in Mexico, but you know, I don't sense that this is something that will appeal to Mexicans. I don't sense this is something that will appeal to Americans. You're trying to appeal to both, and again, until I see the finished product, I shouldn't say that, but just reading it didn't feel exciting to me at all. Felt like, you know, just over-scripted. And I've heard that also, that it was very, very over-scripted.
And Thiago Silva, I think we talked about him a little bit this weekend, but he's back in UFC. And any other notes on this?
We did an interview today, and he said that she made it all up.
She was lying. She wanted it. She wanted his money.
She wanted his money. So yeah. He made it all up. I don't know. I was in contact with some people in that gym that, you know, that night that I don't know about this one. I feel that the timing of bringing him back is freaking hideous, but they did it. I don't think it was one of the better decisions they've made. It may never bite them, but the potential is there to bite them at any time. And whether it's he does something, because I don't think he's the most stable of people, or even if he doesn't, it's ammunition for your enemies. And it's not like, again, if this was Mike Tyson and he could draw like Mike Tyson, you know what I mean? Or Floyd Mayweather, you know, the bottom line is, you know, that you know, Floyd, you know, Floyd gets to box and all that. That's one thing. And no promoter would turn down Floyd. And, you know, Floyd has his own domestic issues himself. But it's Thiago Silva. Risking your company, risking that bad PR for Thiago Silva, I don't think that's the right decision to make. If he was, I mean, I know the argument is he's been exonerated, but he's been exonerated because she wouldn't cooperate and she disappeared. It's not like he was exonerated because we found out he didn't actually do any of these things. I mean, she'd already gotten a restraining order on him, you know, but, you know, a week before any of that other stuff happened.
Let's jump into the mailbag here. Who owns more stock in WWE? Triple H as an individual or Shane McMahon?
I believe Shane McMahon. I'm almost certain, unless he sold a ton of it. I know, you know, but I believe, I know, I saw the amount that Triple H owned. It wasn't that much. I know the amount that Shane was given at the very beginning, and that was a hell of a lot. So Shane may have sold some to fund the company in China. I think he probably did, but he would still have considerably more than Triple H, I'm pretty sure.
This person wants to know any info on any of these WCW events from early 98. Boston Brawl, Malice at the Palace.
What about him?
He says they're listed as iPay-per-views on Wikipedia. They all drew around 5,000 in arenas, and he says, were they actual iPay-per-views or just house shows?
They were house shows, all essentially. Right. They were house shows that were, you know, promoted as iPay-per-views.
So you could actually try to buy this on the internet in 1998?
Yeah. I think they crashed and everything just then, too.
I was going to say, if they worked better then, we got a real problem today.
Yeah.
What is the story behind the Ogawa Hashimoto incident at the January 4th Tokyo Dome in 1999? Was it a work? And could you please explain what it was designed to accomplish?
Inoki pretty much told Ogawa to beat up Hashimoto to make it real. So it was in their minds, in Inoki's mind, it's a work to build up Ogawa. But it was, you know, I mean, he was elbowing him in the spine and stuff. He was doing all kinds of bullshit stuff. I mean, in the spirit of professional wrestling, it's complete bullshit to do that. But, you know, Inoki's got those views, you know, and it was he's a different character, and it's, you know, at times his vision at times worked very well, and Hashimoto Ogawa was a giant successful feud. I mean, it was super successful. So in a sense, if you're looking at it from that perspective, you could really make the, you know, it was all wrong, but, you know, sometimes all wrong works. And this would be the case of it at least working temporarily, because it did serve to kind of screw up Hashimoto's career. So in the long run, did it work? I don't know. But I just remember the night of their climactic match, which was the one that where Hashimoto was supposed to get his big win. That match was freaking, that was one of the biggest matches of the last 20 whatever years in Japan. There was so much public interest. Even though it didn't sell the Tokyo Dome, I mean, the interest in the public was just gigantic. The newspaper coverage was huge. The TV ratings were huge. It was, you know, really, you know, again, like one of the biggest matches. But, you know, then they double-crossed Hashimoto, and he didn't win that one either. You know, he was either going to win or retire. Then he lost, you know, and he was supposed to win. And then Inoki changed it and said, you know, Ogawa's the shooter. I want him to win. So Hashimoto lost his retirement match. And, of course, he wasn't planning on retiring, nor were they planning on him retiring. So then they had to figure out a way out of that. And once you're in that position, you know, then that's always, not always, but that's very often the beginning of the end of you know, when you start doing that. Because it's not that just that one incident alone, obviously, is going to be a killer. But the mentality that allows that thing to happen will also lead to many other things happening. And that combination of all those things usually takes companies down. And, you know, New Japan, in fact, did go down.
Tom here says, have you heard anything on Goldust's contract? Last time I remember hearing was it was up around SummerSlam. Do you know if he's on a month-to-month contract or otherwise? And also, have you heard anything on Christian? 5 months off for a concussion is a little troubling.
Goldust is on a regular contract. Christian, I think the mentality... Christian's cleared. And he's been cleared for a long time. I just think that, that number one, I think that there's people who think that he's too fragile because he keeps getting hurt. And I think that the mentality is that, you know, his wrestling days are over and they probably want to keep him somewhere, but they haven't offered him a spot as an agent or as a trainer. I don't know if they will, but, you know, they just haven't cut him yet or anything like that. They haven't cut him, but, yeah, I mean, he could go tomorrow, but they don't seem to want to have him go.
Jeff here says, why did WWF switch from the old wire mesh cages in 1986 to the blue steel bars that were used from then on? Did guys in that era have a preference for the WWF-style cage versus the NWI-style cage?
Probably either. I think that the cages they used was easier to climb. And also, I think that...
I'm not sure it was better for TV. It's like for filming.
Yeah, I think that there was that, too. That it was better, and, you know, it was Vince's idea. And you know, Vince just liked that, the visual of it.
When Kenta, Devitt, and Steen all become regulars on NXT, do you know if there are any plans to call up some of the current NXT talent to make room for them?
Well, I mean, one has nothing to do with the other, really. In the sense of they're going to call people up when they're ready to call people up. It's not because they have more people coming into NXT that they're going to call people up. They're calling people up when they want to add people. So, you know, will some people get called up? Almost assuredly so. I think that Devitt, you know, and maybe Kenta may be called up before most of these guys. Well, they will get called up before most of these guys. Because they didn't, you know. I mean, Kenta came because he really wanted to do it. It isn't like... you know, But Devitt, you know, Devitt was brought in. Devitt wasn't brought in to spend 3 years in developmental or 2 years in developmental. I think that he was kind of put in a position where they, you know, that they may get him out of developmental pretty quick. He'll have to have a run there because everyone's going to have to. But I think that they're going to probably bring him up. You know, I think he'll be up before 90% or 95% of the talent in NXT that's there now will be up.
Nicholas, what happened to Fandango? He has not been on TV in 5 weeks.
Yeah. It's the house shows every weekend. And that just tells you that they just, you know, they're not into the character. The other problem is that they got to figure out who he's going to dance with.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of, Adam here says, you've said the E! Network is responsible for this awful Bella Twins feud, but I don't understand why, considering that Total Divas, although mostly fake itself, has its own reality and its storylines don't really mirror WWE's. What effect would Nikki and Brie feuding have on the show's filming? Are they going to be feuding in the back now?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow. This person wants to know an update on your injury from earlier in this year. Has it fully healed, and are you okay now?
I was injured in September. I haven't noticed any problems or anything like that. I don't know. I haven't tried to run on it, but I've been biking on it for months. So, I don't notice any problems.
Alrighty.
It's a tough injury, though. I mean, I know that, you know.
Didn't they yell at you to not walk or something like that? What were they yelling you about? They didn't want you to do something.
I don't know. I don't know if I could run on it even now.
Really?
Well, I mean, I have run on it, and I do a couple months ago I ran on it, and it definitely hurt when I ran on it. You know, I mean, it's fine any other time, but if I run on it, no, you know, like that kind of hard thing. It's an injury that's, you know, it can be slow healing. I mean, it took Mark Munoz 6 months. You know, of course, you know, he's training a lot harder than I am.
Hey, wasn't it a year ago you got it? September to September.
Yeah, but, you know, but I mean, I was fine.
Fighters heal faster than normal men, as Don Fry said.
Well, if they're taking growth hormone, they do, but I don't know if they really heal faster. I think they probably would heal slower because of all the injuries.
And were you ever a runner?
I mean, I used to run all the time, yeah.
All right, one more here. Do recently signed WWE wrestlers get a limo drive to WWE headquarters for a meeting with Vince, who signs their contract, fills him in on future character plans, like was done in the past for Ted DiBiase? Would this have been done with Prince Devitt, for example?
I don't know. It's probably Hunter. I know one guy who, you know, not all that long ago, was brought in for a contract, and it was all, you know, Paul Levesque. He didn't meet Vince, didn't see Vince. So it's Vince, it's Paul Levesque's department. I'm sure that there are exceptions, but I don't think that's, you know, it's Paul's department.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. We've got all sorts of things on the front page and a lot more to come, so head up there and check that out. We'll have a new back issue of The Observer up tomorrow, new Observer out on Wednesday. And tons of radio shows, a couple of them this weekend, so make sure you check those out as well. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.